Hello and welcome to this episode of Poultry Today, a podcast brought to you by Poultry Business Magazine. I'm your host, Chloe Ryan, and joining me in this month's episode are two poultry vets to discuss one of the most pressing seasonal issues, avian influenza. Our guests are Richard Jackson, Clinical Director of St David's Poultry Team, and Stephen Lister, who is very well known in the industry and is, of course, a poultry vet from Norfolk. Richard grew up working on his father's commercial turkey farm, and his role at St David's involves developing veterinary care strategies with clients, which incorporates reviewing biosecurity, hygiene and vaccination. He's currently president of the British Veterinary Poultry Association. Stephen Lister has over 40 years' experience in poultry medicine and has taken on various roles in the wider poultry industry, including President of the British Veterinary Poultry Association, the Poultry Veterinary Study Group of the EU and the Turkey Club of Great Britain. He's been a member of a number of advisory committees in relation to poultry welfare and notifiable disease, including the Farm Animal Welfare Council. He's currently president of the European College of Poultry Veterinary Science. It won't have escaped anyone's attention in the poultry industry. Winter was particularly bad for AI. In fact, the winter of 2020 and 2021 was the worst on record for AI in Europe and the UK, with most cases being the highly pathogenic avian influenza H5N8 strain. There were 1,298 outbreaks across Europe in poultry, affecting 2.9 million birds. In the UK in the past year, there were 26 outbreaks affecting poultry and captive birds, leading to huge economic and welfare consequences for producers and their birds. The UK had been officially declared free of AI on the 3rd of September, but as we all know, following several cases in wild birds, the chief vets in England, Scotland and Wales have now introduced an avian influenza prevention zone. So today we're going to talk about what this means for producers and the key steps to take now to try and reduce the risk as far as possible. So, Richard, could you put it into context for us, please? How bad was last season compared to previous years?
Good morning, everyone. I think it's fair to say that last year was the worst year for avian influenza, both in terms of the UK and Europe as a whole. And I think it was quite frightening just how many cases there were in wild birds. And unfortunately, this year hasn't got off to a great start either. Our first case of avian influenza came 1 week earlier than last year. And this year, rather than having the H5N8 strain, we have now got H5N1 as the predominant circulating strain. I think there was a hope that after last year, you kind of take the view that you have one bad year, you have a couple of good years, you have a bad year. But it's a bit unprecedented probably to have 2 years in quick succession of having a high avian influenza challenge in wild birds. And I think it's fair to say that so far for this winter of 2021, we've only had cases in wild birds and in captive pet chickens rather than commercial. But it's early days, and I think the situation is rapidly changing. And as you rightly pointed out, in the last few days, Animal Health have declared an avian influenza prevention zone. And I think it's very, very important that this almost makes it a legal requirement to have good biosecurity on people's holdings. And the majority of farms accredited with a red tractor or BIC line code will be meeting the majority of these requirements as part of accreditation. But for farmers and keepers of smaller flocks who fall out with these accreditation schemes, it puts in place government requirements to make sure that poultry and waterfowl are kept separate, and that there's foot dips for the entry points into people's sheds, and make sure that nobody's feeding their poultry outside, whereby you might attract wild birds in, which could potentially infect domestic poultry.
So, Stephen, could you just tell us, avian influenza, to what degree is this a disease of complacency?
Well, it has become that way, I think, because of the fact that avian influenza used to be a once-in-a-lifetime event. My first experience was right 30 years ago, 1990, 91, one flock of turkeys, over 95% mortality in one house, isolated, cleared up, went away, no spread. And then the next case we had in UK was in 2007. So they occur so infrequently that people do tend to think it's not going to affect me. The second case that we had, again, isolated farm in the middle of Suffolk, it was well sorted out by APHA and DEFRA, cleaned up. It didn't spread from one farm to another. And therefore, people feel it's almost something that won't happen to them. But obviously, the recent experiences have been a bit of a game changer on that.
So if it used to be a very rare occurrence, why do you think it has become a real problem in the past few years?
It seems to be that the virus has changed, not dramatically, but the current H5N8 strain, which is the one that caused us the major issues last winter, appears to have the ability to much more easily infect a range of waterfowl and seabirds. It spreads and persists in them and seems to do that much more than previous strains did. So rather than it being a chance event, we now have across Europe a wide number of birds with a virus that seems to persist in them. They become little virus factories. That spills over into poultry due to the annual mobile migrations of these birds. And the virus appears also to be able to remain in the environment. So if a wild bird defecates somewhere, it's into the environment, and that virus has stuck there, ready for it to pick up on any little chink in our armor of biosecurity and get inside poultry houses. So we now have a virus that seems to circulate, as I say, much more widely and more prolonged in waterfowl.
A lot has happened over the past week, as we know, but now is a particularly crucial time for producers. Could you just summarise the role of migrating wild birds in the transmission of AI and why autumn is such a risky period?
Of course. So ornithologists have very detailedly worked out the migratory routes of the vast majority of birds worldwide, and they've divided the globe up into a number of different migratory pathways. So for us in the UK, we sit in the East Atlantic flyway, and that stretches all the way from Southern Africa up to the UK, across from Canada and across to Pakistan. Now, unfortunately for Northern Europe and us in the UK, the vast majority of our migratory birds come from Russia and Kazakhstan. And because Asia tends to have, I guess, more circulating strains of avian influenza than other parts of the world, it means that these migratory birds that come to the UK to escape the harsh Russian winters have got the ability to carry avian influenza across Northern Europe and ultimately into the UK. And it's not until these birds leave in the springtime that the risk tends to recede. But we do need to remember that these migratory birds don't directly tend to infect our domestic poultry. What happens is that these migratory birds, such as pink-footed geese or widgeon, will then go and infect our swans and geese that are resident in the UK. And then these birds go on to potentially act as a reservoir for our commercial poultry. And it's really, really important that just because avian influenza is in our wild bird population, that does not mean it's inevitable that it will get into our domestic flocks. We've really got to practice good biosecurity to try and make sure that we keep out any diseases in the wild bird population.
And of course, we had a particularly bad winter last year, and we were already starting to see cases in wild birds again in the UK. How concerning is it that we are already seeing cases right at the beginning of November?
It is a great concern because obviously this can be a devastating disease in the birds that it infects. It's distressing for everybody to see. The birds die in high numbers and are very sick. Also, the virus has become established, then we lose our international freedom from disease, and therefore it becomes an issue for us in trying to export and move birds around for a long time. So it just becomes a worry for us. And the fact that we know that it's in large numbers of wild birds, then, you know, it could pop up anywhere. And that's obviously been the experience of the last 10 days or so, where we've had, luckily, only in small backyard or captive flocks, outbreaks in England, Wales and Scotland. So it's anybody's guess where it might pop up next.
Talk about good biosecurity practices in a minute, but it's natural to think that if it's circulating in a wild bird population, free-range producers are at far greater risk. Is that correct?
Undoubtedly, going outside does provide more opportunities for commercial poultry or for pet chickens to come into contact with the avian influenza virus. But the European Food Safety Authority did a study after a previous outbreak of AI back in 2017. And what they found is that by housing free-ranging birds, you get a fourfold reduction in the risk of avian influenza. But practicing good biosecurity gave us a 44-fold reduction in the risk of avian influenza incursion. So I guess the message to everyone listening today is, yes, free-range poultry are at a greater risk than housed poultry of developing avian influenza, but much greater risk factors such as poor biosecurity. And I think that it's important that, yes, housing birds is potentially a tool in our armory, but it is by no means the most important thing. The most important thing is practicing good biosecurity, which we can talk about in a few moments.
You mentioned a little earlier your personal experience of working with producers who were affected. Were there any clear weak links in their biosecurity in those cases? Or is it occasionally the case that there is no clear reason why a unit has been affected?
That's really interesting question. And the large number of outbreaks last winter enabled us to answer some of those questions. In the past, as I say, it's very much been a chance event. We've said, or maybe the buildings weren't right, or there's been some flooding, or there's been some ingress, or the farm involved happened to be very close to an area where we know that there are wild birds, or it was a very bad winter, which meant that wild birds came over here in greater numbers. But the only good spin-off of the large number of outbreaks that we had last winter was that APHA were able to undertake a very detailed and very useful assessment of all the risk factors that occurred on those farms. And what they found was that another good thing is that it's not a virus that seems to spread from farm to farm easily because of the good biosecurity procedures we've got in place. And so we can pat ourselves on the back and be very pleased that we do not spread diseases from farm to farm. All the outbreaks, 24 outbreaks we had last winter, appeared to be separate incursions onto that farm through a breach in biosecurity, through contact with wild birds. And what it's shown up is that we have contingency plans that work up to a degree, but we have shortcomings in the environment around our farms, not understanding totally how easily it is for the virus to get from the outside inside. And that could be either because we walked it in, but what they showed last winter, for instance, that, you know, we have to put in lots of straw bales into farms, litter bales to keep birds comfortable, especially during the winter months. And bringing those bales from the outside to the inside, there is clear evidence that they were contaminated on the outside. So there's that aspect, there's vermin control, and to be really honest, the game changer is the fabric of our buildings. Everybody's talking about climate change this week. There is more cases of flooding. There is more water ingress into houses through sidewalls or roofs. And that's a big risk, because if it brings in material that's contaminated with wild bird feces, that's bringing it in. So those outbreaks were terrible, but they did enable us to really home in on what are the chinks in our armour on biosecurity.
Let's have some advice then. We all know biosecurity is crucial, but what should producers do right now to make sure it's as watertight as possible?
So after last year's outbreak, there was a number of webinars carried out by various members of the poultry industry and animal health through the avian influenza, poultry health and welfare group. And what they were really highlighting to producers was that the major routes of infection for bird flu are through water ingress. So that tends to be through leaking roofs. And what you get is you get wild birds defecating on the roof of your shed. And then the rain washes the fecal matter and the virus into your chicken or turkey shed. Equally, where we get flooding and we get water ingress through the floors, that can carry the virus up into the shed as well, whereby our birds can get infected. Other things that were picked up by animal health were where we store our bedding. So a lot of farmers out there will have bales out in the yard to bed up the birds in case they want to top up the litter. And these bales need to be made sure that they're maintained in good condition and that they're covered so that they cannot come into contact with fecal matter from wild birds. That is a big, big risk factor. Also really, really important that was highlighted by animal health was to make sure that we have staff training. I think that a lot of farms are very good at having the boot dips and having the visitors' huts and having PPE. But it's really important that people understand why it's important to have good biosecurity. It's not just enough to preach at members of staff. They've got to understand the importance of it. And it tends to be part-time staff, weekend staff, or maintenance people coming in that are a greater risk factor than the everyday members of staff. And I think that the other thing that's worth highlighting to anyone listening to this podcast that's got free-ranging poultry is we've all got our foot dips there. And I think it's important to stress that everyone generally is following the guidelines of replenishing the disinfectant at least twice a week and making sure that the boot dip's covered. But disinfectants are only good at working on clean surfaces. And if you're wandering around a range area with muddy boots and then dip them, the disinfectant will be inactivated by the mud. So it's really, really important that for free-ranging producers in particular, that the boots are washed either with a tap or potentially you've got sort of a wash boot dip just to sort of get rid of any mud or fecal matter before then going and using the boot dip itself, because disinfectants will not work on dirty surfaces, and that equally applies to washing out our sheds between flocks.
So to summarise the key points for producers right now, what measures do they need to take today or this week to do everything they can to prevent their farm being affected?
They need to stop their birds getting contact with wild bird feces. The moment the prevention zone and procedures that have been put in place are for enhanced biosecurity, but with no enforced housing of birds at this stage. And that's good, because we could lose a lot of our marketing abilities if we have to house flocks for long periods. But every individual producer needs to just sort of stand back, think about their farm, think about how could they introduce something from the outside inside. And as I say, that would be people, equipment. It's heavily poached, poorly drained areas between houses, so you could walk in wild bird feces that way. Vermin, rats and mice can carry the virus. They don't get infected with it, but they could again walk through areas contaminated with wild bird feces and walk that into the shed. And we're talking about very small amounts of virus, you know, we're talking about teaspoonful sizes, that sort of thing. If you introduce that into a house with this virus, then it is possible for that to spread and cause problems. And so at this late stage, it's impossible for me to say to people, you know, take the roof off and put a new one on. But obviously that's a longer term aspect, but it's really doing everything you can to keep the insides of your sheds as secure from wild bird feces as possible.
Right, okay. Good advice there. Now, if the worst does happen, what are the main clinical signs of AI in a flock of poultry? What should producers be looking out for?
I think it's fair to say that sometimes the clinical signs of bird flu are non-specific, and they will vary tremendously depending on the strain of bird flu. So not every strain produces the same clinical signs, and it will have slight differences in which species of birds we're talking about, turkeys versus chickens, for example. Last year's H5N8 and my understanding of this year's H5N1 is that both strains produced high mortality in the birds. The majority of people listening to this podcast will have a veterinary health plan, and on that it will state that you should contact a vet if the daily mortality exceeds 0.3%. So mortality is obviously the big one. But we can get more subtle signs such as nervous signs, head shaking or sneezing, diarrhea. For laying poultry, a considerable drop in egg production and in egg shell quality, and diarrhea can also be a clinical sign. But the problem is that none of these signs are a diagnostic for avian influenza, which is why it makes it so challenging to diagnose, and why animal health have to be called in if anyone is even remotely suspicious of it, so that they can carry out the proper testing rather than people trying to diagnose it on clinical signs.
And your personal experience of dealing with AI, can you just give us an example of when you've dealt with this on farm, if indeed you have, and how you came to the conclusion that it was in fact avian influenza?
So I think there's a couple of things that tend to make you very, very suspicious of avian influenza. The time of year and what's happening elsewhere. So there's very, very good surveillance carried out by Animal Health and their equivalents across Europe. So if we were in the middle of July or August, for example, I think that even with high mortality, avian influenza or Newcastle disease tends not to be at the top of the list. Whereas in the situation we're in today, whereby we know that bird flu is in our wild bird population, and there's been a number of cases both in the UK and across Europe, I think any raise mortality that you cannot explain tends to warrant a call into DEFRA. It also depends as well whether you can rule out other things that might be causing the mortality. So say, for example, if we were dealing with a flock of laying hens, you might, if you find blackhead, for example, you can kind of explain the mortality that way. But it's these non-explainable mortalities that tend to warrant a call into DEFRA, or birds looking very, very ill. And I dealt with a case last year whereby the birds had a horrible, horrible diarrhea and they just looked so miserable. In some cases with bird flu, what you'll find is that the vet will visit the flock and you know, sort of treat the birds for what we think is quite a straightforward condition, and a poor response to treatment can tend to sort of pique people's interest, and also a history on the site. So particularly if there is a history that whereby there was water ingress through flooding or through a leaking roof, that again makes you considerably more suspicious. And in reality, I think the message for producers and vets out there is, if in doubt, just put a call into DEFRA. They've got their helpline on their website. And in many cases, Animal Health will talk you through it and they will decide over the phone that they don't need to do anything more. So sometimes as well, Animal Health will come out and they will have a look at the birds and decide, do you know what, they don't look like they've got bird flu, or they may take testing to rule it out. Also, what's available to producers and vets is testing to exclude. So this is for cases whereby neither the vet nor DEFRA think that it's bird flu, but people would like to just have a bit of peace of mind. But you do have to pay for that service. So the testing for exclusion does carry quite a cost, and that will fall on the producer, but it can be used for peace of mind. But it is not a given that Animal Health will approve it in every circumstance. So at the moment, you might find that because bird flu is out there, there might be a reluctance to allow testing to exclude, and Animal Health might just want to come out and look at the birds and carry out the testing themselves.
So, Stephen, what are the obligations of a producer who suspects AI?
If a producer feels they have any suspicions of notifiable disease, and we're talking about avian influenza today, but it also applies to Newcastle disease, they have a legal obligation to report this to their local APHA office. And in the mains, what's going to give them a rise to those suspicions is anything out of the ordinary. They're in with their birds all day, every day. They know what they look like when they're fit and well, and they can quickly identify. And we have a really good track record of identifying virus almost before it got in. We've been very good at finding where it is. So we're talking about major sudden mortality, major sudden egg drops, or birds just look very sick. In turkeys, it's often been described as cathedral syndrome, because you go into a shed where you should have very noisy turkeys, and you go in and there's no sound at all. You could hear a pin drop. We have to be aware there are other causes of disease, infectious or mechanical, like feeder breakdowns, that can cause mortality or egg drops. So the advice must be that know what's normal, alert your vet if anything's abnormal, and both assess how severe it is. And if it's unexplained, unusual or severe, then it needs to be reported to APHA, especially in this time period when we're on hyper alert to the possibility of infection.
Okay. Just finally, to try and focus on a positive point, what have we really learned over the past few years that's a positive message for producers? Even though last year was particularly bad, what's actually been gained from that, and what have we got better at?
I think that there has been some positives, and although it's quite depressing looking at the winter ahead, one of the good things that came from last year was the fact that there was no transmission between poultry units last year of bird flu. So every case that we had, Animal Health believe, was a fresh introduction from wild birds, which is great because it means that nobody within the poultry industry last year was spreading avian influenza around between units. So I think that we can congratulate ourselves on that side of things and predominantly focus on trying to stop incursions from wild birds in the area.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Richard. Do you have any final messages for producers or any other points you wanted to make?
I'll just finish with three words, Chloe, and that is biosecurity, biosecurity and biosecurity.
And that's all from this episode of Poultry Today. Don't forget to follow us on @PoultryBusiness. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, why not leave us a review?